Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 359. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show for I think the fifth time because it worked so well with, you know, the Jaws movies and also Fast and Furious. That is Georgia Dow.
So we can't. I can't do a seventh episode. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, we can do a Furious 7. Was potentially, you know, well, it's the turning point in the franchise that's going to bring us into a new trilogy of films, thanks to Vin Diesel.
Okay.
So
there we go.
But we're not going to talk about anything like that. What we will have is an agenda-free segment at the end where we talk about all sorts of stuff from Jackie Chan movies to even, you know, tips on finding a therapist, if that's something what you're looking, you know, looking for, and why you should, you know, look into it. Georgia has some great advice on that, and this is going to be a free agenda-free segment for everybody, Patreon supporters or not, and it will give you an idea of some of the benefits of being a Patreon supporter, and hopefully, it's not like necessarily why you should do it, but it's a little bonus thank you segment for everyone that does feel the drive to support the show at patreon.com/thefitcast. Thank you so much to everyone that does do that. It allows me to do these episodes advertisement free, and it allows me to continue to set aside the time to bring you great people like Georgia Dow. So, Georgia, it's been a while since we last talked.
Yes.
And, you know, folks listening can bear with me for a second, but I've gone through a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a transformation, but maybe a next step sort of thing by, I got rid of like 85% of all my video games.
Wow.
In the last 3 weeks.
Wow.
Which is like 180 games. That's a lot.
That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
How did you go through that process of choosing which? It's like choosing your children, right?
Oh,
like what?
Yeah. Well, I will tell people, like, if you haven't checked it out, you can go to thefitcast.com. There's like a 2-part article blog thingy that I did where I got pretty real about it, and it's always easier for me to get personal and real when I'm like writing this stuff down instead of like talking into a microphone. So maybe I'll be a little bit more open in that stuff. But basically, I found that all this, having all these games was having a negative effect on my life. It wasn't actually benefiting my life. And it was that epiphany. And when I had that happen, I had to go through the process of like making sure that I only held on to everything that is going to enhance my life, whether it have whether it had like very specific positive memories or stuff that I wanted to, you know, play for fun and not just have like all of these games, some of which, you know, dozens of games that would take 40 plus hours, which I'll never have the time to play.
Right.
But I like the idea of thinking that maybe I would have the time to play them someday, but I really won't. If anything, my game time is slowly reduced over the years, but and then you get like paralyzed, like, what do I play, what am I going to actually do, like, am I going to start this game, am I going to play it for 2 hours and put it back on the shelf and never, you know, touch it again because like I'm going to worry about going back to it and then I'm just going to stress out about all of it. So yeah, I went through like eBay and Amazon and where else, and some stuff on Craigslist and got rid of all this stuff, not really thinking about, you know, making money off it or anything, just thinking, trying to get some relatively fair value for it, but still prioritizing just getting rid of it at the same time. And it's been good. And I actually talked to Alex Aniel of Brave Wave on an episode of Back of My Play for like 2 hours about this whole process, if you really want to like get into how I did all this stuff. But
good for you.
It does,
like,
feel
way better.
It's a
wonderful thing, though. It's a wonderful thing to declutter. I think that we end up getting so attached to material things and they end up, you know, having their own emotional value and they take up their own, not only physical space, but emotional space. And we do feel more calm and relaxed in an area that has less clutter. More zen is better. for us. And so I, even when I do like a closet, I'll go through and I'll think, one, how do I feel when I wear this? Mm-hmm. How long has it been since I've worn it? And does it make me feel good wearing this? And if I have negative connotations to a shirt, mm-hmm. It's just gone. I don't need that.
Have you read the book? I'm looking up the title right now. It's on Amazon. The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, the Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing.
No, I haven't.
It's a really good book. And if the people that are listening, we won't spend a ton of time on this, but if you do feel like you're some person that does have too much stuff, and I swear, like, I know it took me a couple years of like getting rid of like 10% of the stuff and adding 20% more and then getting rid of 30% of the stuff and then getting 10% more, like, in going back and forth and finally just really flipping the switch and making it happen. But it's a good book for people to try to figure out what they should hold on to. And I know mm-hmm. everyone has their thing. For some people, it's like collecting whatever it is, snow globes. For me, it was having all these games, and it was like dominating. It was literally, it dominated my living room. Like, you came into my living room and it was just friggin' video games all over the place, which is cool to a point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will say ever since I've done this, like, I've been able to actually like go back and I've been focusing on like one game that if I have some free time and I want to like take a 20-minute chunk, I will go play something and then that's it. Like, I don't have to worry about $3,000 worth of video games sitting on a shelf.
Right.
I probably made like $1,000 for getting rid of 180 games. But that's a trip. Like, that's a vacation. So.
Yeah. You're going to be going back to Japan.
I actually am in December. So.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah. Sorry. It's a business trip.
Still a business trip. I'm putting that in air quotes.
I get to work for one day.
I really want to. I have a really good tip. Not trip. I have a really good technique to be able to declutter really quickly. Mm-hmm. So we find it really difficult to get rid of things by taking them and putting them away. So what you want to do is you want to clear out your space, put it on in a large neutral area, so mm-hmm. not in the space where it's usually kept. And then you only pick out the things that you want to keep. And you have to do it kind of quickly so you don't overthink and get attached and feel guilty and I shouldn't, those type of thoughts. And you just pick out the things that really are meaningful to you. And then everything else you just sort into after that. You put them all back and then you sort into give away, throw away, and mm-hmm. then you're done. And that greatly increases the amount of stuff that you'll be able to get rid of.
Oh, God. And it's like, I know this is, I like these episodes because we get to focus on like the mental side of health. And I swear, I'm sure you've heard other people say this, but it is like having a huge weight off my shoulders and just, and it's almost like just getting rid of it and knowing that it's like, I don't miss it. And these are things that, like, there's a million ways to play these games, like legally or not. And you can always go on eBay and say like, oh man, I really miss my copy of, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog 3 for the Sega Genesis, and it's going to mm-hmm. cost you like $12 to get that thing back and play it again. So it's not the end of the world, and I really recommend, like, I think almost everyone has something in their life, and it helped me like realize how much I enjoy video game music, and I don't have a huge collection, but I like import music from Japan because I get to get the benefit of those memories and like my favorite part of video games, but I can listen to it and enjoy it while I'm doing work and doing other stuff. And it doesn't take all my attention. I can just listen to it in the background while I'm going through my emails, while I'm putting together like a new manual for work or something like that, a PowerPoint. So it's like a win-win for me.
Right.
So do you deal with this a lot? Do you deal with this a lot from people that come and talk to you and like have mm-hmm. to get rid of stuff? Or do you have to kind of feel, do people know they need to do this? Or do you have to kind of like feel your way into figuring out like and telling people like, hey, just like, this is something you bring up a lot. Is this something that you need to deal with?
So I deal with some people that are hoarders. So they have a real need to keep things. And it comes from a place of scarcity and worry. And maybe in their lifetime at some point, they dealt with poverty or they dealt with loss or they dealt with, you know, a family member that would take their things. And so they didn't have anything that was truly theirs. And then it becomes very difficult to part with other things because they all have an emotional connection to you. And when I might need it and maybe I could do this and I don't like the idea or thought of throwing something away. And so for other people, it's more of an attachment issue. They are emotionally attached. And I remember when I was little, I would, I'd like 100 stuffed animals, maybe more. And I would feel guilty if I only brought one, like I would, like they all lived in my bed with me. I don't know how I fit.
100 of them? You must have like a California king.
I didn't. And they were piled up. It's a mound of stuff down. I'm lucky I didn't smother myself to death at some point at night. And in the morning, I would feel guilty if I would take one and bring it downstairs. Because then how would all of the other stuffed animals feel? I had a lot of empathy even as a child. And
that's,
so I would
that's
bring,
a good thing.
Well, yeah. It's a good thing for a therapist, for sure. So I would bring them down on like my blanket. And then, of course, I wouldn't want to bring them back up. But I know that feeling of this brings back memories. And, you know, if I lose this object, then I might forget the memories that are attached with it. Or if I'm, you know, if I throw this out, the person that gave it to me that may not be around anymore, may not be in my life, it's doing a disservice to them. And so you also have to deal with why you're holding on to all of these items. What is stopping you from getting rid of things? Because, you know, that does not make us who we are as people. Mm-hmm. And often it can become something that hinders life space. It hinders the area that you can work. It hinders how you feel. And that feeling of decluttering, getting rid of things does make you feel a little bit lighter. It reduces stress.
Oh God, like it is. And I know like even people in this industry, like the fitness industry and stuff, I know people that are, they have so many books and they have books that they read like 15 years ago that they'll never go back to, because especially in like this industry, like things change like every other year. People are, you know, we've had more studies done and like that information that's 15 years old is actually kind of dated. What do you think about people just like with books and stuff like that? Because they will kind of say like, yeah, but you know, books are healthy. Like it's good to read, right?
You know, I understand that feeling of wanting to have that library and wanting to go back over there. It all depends on at what scope it is. If it has a place, if it is neat, if it gives you happy feelings when you look at it, awesome. If they're piling up, if you have no space to place them, if they're starting to encroach on other areas of your home, if when you look at them, instead of thinking, oh, what happy, great thoughts, you're thinking, oh God, I don't know where to place this, but I can't get rid of it, even though it's not enhancing my life. That's when you have an issue with something. And so there's some people that collect things and it brings them lots of joy and it fills up a lot of space, but that's a happy thought. And I'm like, go for it. Enjoy that. And so one person, something that might be an issue for one person may not be in the same situation. It may not be an issue for someone else. You have to kind of think about what is the emotional connection to that, and is it a detriment or is it an enhancement to your life?
I did get some questions. I posted about this that we're going to do the show on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm going to start sprinkling some of these in because it tends to turn into just like Kevin asking his own questions for an hour. But so let's go to this question from James, which is a great question for people that are trainers and coaches. Please ask Georgia what strategies she uses to build trust with new clients and patients. How do we prove we are authentic and we care right off the bat? And this is something that is James, great question, because there's a big trend in the fitness industry for like people trying to just promote, and people, I swear, I know people are sick of me. I've talked about this the last couple of episodes, but having just like incredible enthusiasm, like trying to coach trainers to just be incredibly enthusiastic and almost be like fake enthusiastic when they're with people. And, you know, at what point does that become no longer genuine and just like you being fake to someone. But I don't know if that is, applicable to this as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's really important. Any relationship you have with someone, be it your doctor, your dentist, your trainer, your therapist, the connection is the most important thing, and it is strongly related to how well someone's going to do towards their goals that you're working on with them, because you want to feel trusted. And so I think the first thing, and the problem with the advice of just being really enthusiastic, is that is very, if you're a coach or a trainer, that's very the coach or the trainer influenced and centric. You're in your own little world. And in order to form a trusting relationship, you have to be outside of that. You have to go outside of your bubble. And so the first thing that you should be is interested and curious about what the other person wants. And I think that this was difficult when I did martial art training, is that, I was really hardcore and I wanted to be like Jackie Chan, and I wanted to be the best and work really hard. And sometimes I had to stop myself and say, but that's not what the person that I'm training wants. And am I doing this for me, or am I doing this for them? And so the ability to stop and listen, to hear what the goals are. And if you haven't done that, you should find out, what are the goals for the person that I'm working with? How much fun do they want to have? Are they enjoying this? Do they find this as a benefit? And so the first thing is that you want to make sure that you listen to them and you give them that space to be able to share a little bit of their journey and why they're on it and what they hope to get from it. And I would always have that written down, because you forget. You get stuck in the moment, you go down one path, and you can forget what was the actual purpose of us starting this path now. And sometimes it changes, which is absolutely fine. And so the pause and the listening, not to what they're saying, mm-hmm. but why someone is saying it,
right,
is vastly important to that. Being attuned to them and meeting with their pace. Eye contact, working on your breathing, it's really nerve-wracking. And I think a lot of people, when they first go to a trainer, they're worried about, is the trainer going to be judging me? Am I not going to be doing enough? Are they proud of me? Are they feeling good? And so a lot of times when we're doing that, those words of encouragement, to be able to be there, to know what the person that you're training needs before they actually are able to, because some people won't be able to express it, is a really important connection that you can make to that. And if you're truly there, and so that's why it's really good, you do your breathing and you do your own stuff, so that you're also, like, we have so many things happening in our lives, and sometimes you're having a really long day. But to this person, this might be the one thing that they do for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so you also want to make sure that you are actually there for the person that you're training.
Right.
And so, and some people, especially if they have an attachment issue, if they're having difficulty, if they have abandonment issues, even you taking a text or taking a phone call, and it might be very hurtful to them. So you also want to make sure that you have an open line of communication to say, I apologize for this. This is really important. I must take this. Because it's just such a difficult experience. It's so, and if you're a person, if you're a trainer, you're probably great and you're great at fitness and you feel comfortable with your body, but a lot of people don't. And it's very, you feel very vulnerable and naked when you're going to see a trainer to be able to make yourself better. And you might have, started training because you've gone through some other life hardships. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very important relationship. And if you can connect with someone and even ask them, was this good for you? What are you hoping for? If you're unsure that there was a good connection, I would be straight up and ask, which is hard to do because sometimes you don't want to hear it, right? You don't think there's a connection. You might be like, I don't really want them to say, I didn't like the way that you did this. But you have to kind of say, that's going to make me better.
I don't think we've talked about this before, but I think I'd be curious to hear your thoughts in terms of dealing with people's mindset when it comes to food and when it comes to people that don't have necessarily a healthy outlook on food and nutrition and stuff like that. Have you worked with a lot of people who just don't have a a healthy mindset when it comes to food? And then how do you kind of work with them to help figure out what is actually going on?
Right. It's actually one of the first three things that I teach in session one.
Oh.
We go through three things if we're dealing with anxiety or depression. Mm-hmm. So I ask, how are you sleeping? I ask, how are you eating and are you exercising?
Mm-hmm.
And so people's relationship for food is a very complex issue. In a lot of cultures, food is love or food is control or food is guilt.
Mm-hmm.
None of those are good. None of those are healthy. And you're going to end up with a lot of food issues because of that. And you're not going to be listening to your body. And if you've been, it's a really strange thing is that we teach children to just eat everything on their plate and not to listen to their body. And now we don't worry because at one point there was poverty and there was food shortage. And so wastefulness was a horrible thing. But now food is, in most parts of the world, food is exceptionally plentiful. And the issues that we deal with are, you know, overeating or not eating healthy or missing out on nutrients because, again, now we're not listening to our body again. And so we teach our children to eat everything. And then later as adults, we teach them, you know, stop if you're not hungry and eat small portions and, you know, listen to what you feel like you need. And how does the food that you're eating make you feel? Do you feel good after you eat this? How will you feel if you eat all of it? Are you mindful while you eat? And it's a really difficult thing. A lot of, like, even in places where they eat very high fat diets, such as France, very unhealthy by, you know, regular standards, but they have very low heart disease because they eat slowly, they enjoy their food, they taste their food, they chat while they eat, and that also gives them a lot more time to digest, and there's less chance that they're going to eat too much of it. It's fatty foods, but they're not going to eat too much of it because they're going to be listening and being calm, and it takes about 20 minutes before you've eaten food to be able to. So one thing, how do we know that we're even full? One thing, it goes into our mouth and we feel it as it goes through our throat.
Mm.
Second thing is that we feel the filling of our stomach. And then the third thing is our blood sugar levels afterwards. But that takes a 20-minute process. And so you might not be full at one point. And if you're not thinking, if you're eating without thought, and or you're eating very quickly, or if you feel like a bad person if you don't finish everything on the plate, then you're going to be rushing through this. And by the time that you actually say that you're full, you're actually way very, very over full because there's 20 minutes later and then your levels are going to be out of whack. And so it's a really important thing, not just what we eat. And I think that a lot of coaches work on the nutritional value of food. And I think that we also need to deal with the emotional value of food and the process of how we eat. And if we are mindful of how we feel while we eat, how quickly are we eating? Are we tasting our food? And are we enjoying the process? If you're stressed and eating, it's going to be a horrible experience. Because when you're stressed out or anxious or nervous or rushing, all of the blood has left your stomach and it's gone to your main muscle group. So you can, like, when we're stressed, it's a fight or flight response mm-hmm. into danger. And even emotional danger will cause the same reaction in our body. And then you're not going to digest because there's no blood there to digest your food. And it's going to feel horrible. You're going to get indigestion. You have greater chance of acid reflux, irritable bowel syndrome. All kinds of different things happen when you're dealing with a stressful mindset and eating at the same time. And so there's so many. It's such an important process for if you're training and if you're not training and just for emotional health. And I don't know if that really answered your question.
No, it totally does. And it like brings us down into a whole other path because like this is, you know, this is something that I have talked to a lot of guests about because we've really kind of figured out, you know, making sure if someone gets like an hour's worth of strenuous activity, you know, three times per week, like if they're coming into our gym and lifting three times per week and it's like a sound program, we have a pretty good idea of like what makes sense to program, how to dial in someone's volume and stuff like that. But I think at our gym, like at MBSC, the biggest thing that we still struggle with is how do we help people that other, you know, whatever, 47 hours that they're not at the gym in between sessions when they may not have that support? How much support do we give them, or what can we do while they're inside those four walls to help prepare them for when they leave that building? And I know that's that's something like a lot of our trainers, like trainers and coaches deal with, is like, how do we help people out? Whether it's like the adult that's going to work, you know, 60 hours that week and is going to come in tired, but they're still going to train. Or like in college, when I dealt with college athletes who would come in and lift for an hour and a half or something like that for their sport, but then they'd still go to the dining halls, or they eat garbage, or they would skip breakfast still, or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, how do we even start to attack that?
Yeah, I'll give you the way that I do it in treatment, and that might give you a thought, because it depends on the situation. And it depends on the person's personality type. And that makes it like a really important question, because you're not going to have one size fits all in an approach. And if you do, you're going to miss out on people that doesn't work with. And so I think that a lot of people that train are more leaning towards the type A personality type. So people that are hard on themselves, achievement oriented, perfectionistic, often overly critical towards themselves. But if they understand why something should be done, it will greatly increase the chances of them doing it. If they feel like they're forced and pushed into a corner, then they probably will not. Or it lessens the chance that they will have a pleasant experience in trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always think, what's missing and why is someone doing that? And so I always ask, what is your relationship with food? You know, why I'm going to give you, and I always give them my premise of why I'm going to ask you to do a certain homework that I give to someone. I'm going to give you my thesis on why I think this is important. And then you can make your own judgment whether that makes sense to you and if you can add it into your life or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some people, they won't be able to. And I don't think that that's something that you should. You know, everyone takes their little step, and it may not be that food is their first step that they're going to be able to take. And just starting to care about your body and dealing with your own feelings of self-love is a really important journey. So I don't think that it's something where you should feel like it's a personal failure, or it's something that is so important that it should be a detriment to the rest of the coaching and training, because maybe for them, it won't be one of the first things that they deal with. But after a while, they'll say, you know what? I need this as well. And then they'll go back to it afterwards. But I always go through, you know, why food is so important to who we are as people. And what we're doing is that what we put into us, one is you should never treat your body like a garbage can. So if you don't want to eat something on your plate because you're full, it is much better to throw that out in the garbage than to treat your body like a garbage. And that's the way that I deal with people that have food guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they overeat. Because it's just such a horrible thing to now make your body have to convert extra things into calories and gain fat where you don't need it. And it's not an act of love. And you want to treat yourself with love and respect in all areas of your life. And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that we're trying to build up, you know, we need to use the building blocks, which we get through food, in order to make sure that we're really healthy. And the problem is that if you don't get enough nutrients from a variety of different sources of food, then you're going to be missing the building blocks, and the house that you're going to be building is going to have a very shaky foundation. And then you're increased prone to injury or sickness, because if your body needs to make those muscles, it will steal from other areas of your body.
Right.
And if people haven't either gotten a blood test to check out your iron, your thyroid, your B12, these type of things, you should. It's something that everyone should do, even if it's something that you do out of pocket and
right.
isn't covered by your system. You should do that, and you should do it once a year.
Oh, yeah. Like that's actually let's see. How am I going to talk about this? All right. So, yeah, that's actually been somewhat of a newer trend in you know, for people that I've talked to, too, is about doing some blood tests and actually, I won't go down that road, because I've had people try to come on the show to talk about that stuff, and I've been a little bit wary, because it's like companies that like want to create this whole program based on your blood type and all this stuff, which is, yeah.
Yeah, right, I hear right. you.
So,
yeah. Go with your doctor and just get yourself checked out. Make
exactly.
sure that you're, you know, in fine form, because I have an iron deficiency, like a massive amount of an iron deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
If a vampire drank from me, it would die.
Well, you know,
the vampire's nightmare.
Is that a zombie thing too? Do they care about iron, or do they just want meat and flesh, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's just flesh. I think this is only a vampire thing.
Hey,
so any vampires out there?
Yeah.
You know. This is gonna be bad for you.
You're not in Montreal, right?
I am.
Okay, yeah. Just drive up to Montreal, fly up, and go to Georgia Dow's house.
And I'll wipe you out.
Right. We'll have that to fight the. Actually, you'd be great friends with Blade. Blade would get along great.
Yeah, we'd be a great fighting duo.
Oh man, those movies are great. So that's not what we're going to stay focused and locked into this though, because otherwise I'd be yelled at by the internet. So you know what's good? Peanut butter. Peanut butter's great, and
I love peanut butter.
Right?
I love peanut butter. I think I lived on peanut butter for like my first years of life. It was my breakfast every single morning until I was, I don't know, 22 or something like that.
Learning that you could toast bread and put peanut butter on it, got me to leave. When I was a kid growing up, I grew up on frozen waffles, and
which are also good.
Those are also good, but it was like my dad, and this is a sidebar or whatever. But my dad eats like a 4-year-old. He still eats like a 4-year-old to the point where like. God, we all have those parents of those relatives. Like he goes to like the, you know, we'll go out to eat and he'll like have very specific orders for the food to make it so it would be like for a 4-year-old. Like if he goes and gets a pizza, he needs to make sure he has the sauce, not with the chunks of tomato in it though. It has to be the right, like the smooth sauce because he doesn't like the chunks of tomato and it has to be like French fries that are overcooked and like all this. Oh man. These turn into like my sessions with George where I can just like rant for a second. God.
No, I think I have a little bit of your dad in me. I sometimes do get a little bit particular about the way that I want something served because that's what makes me happy. And my thought is this on it is that most restaurants want to serve you food if it's not too much of a pain to make you happy so that you come back. And so I feel a little bit like I'm helping them out so that I'm happy and then I'm going to come back and then I will give them more money. So that's at least my justification for it.
I think it's only when like I'm like looking at the waitress, I'm like, I'm just giving her that look. It's like,
I'm so sorry.
I know.
I'm so sorry.
I lived with this for a number of years and, you know, maybe if we could just get him a vegetable, that would be great. Maybe you could eat some vegetables too.
Right.
I would appreciate that.
Right.
Like just sneak him in there.
You might have to ask them to puree it and put it into like the hamburger or something that he's having.
But this is just your alert to, you know, now everyone that's listening is be like, yeah, dude, I got to get some peanut butter because all you got to do is think of that, you know, jar of peanut butter or maybe that fresh stuff where you can make it at the store now, which is even better. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
Man, we could go in so many different directions. And I'm going to go to the Facebook questions again because otherwise I'm going to monopolize this time. So this is a question from Guy. Guy is a friendly intern at MBSC. He says, my question is, as a psychotherapist, what are your most effective strategies for implementing new changes into people's lives, especially in an occupation where time spent with the client is minimal? And as a practitioner, you're trying to be most effective and efficient. Maybe as an example, trying to teach a type A personality to relax and live a bit more carefree and flexible.
That's such a good question.
Guy's
really
a great dude.
Great question. And I love that because my first answer would have been it all depends on their personality type and you have to be good at reading people, which you really do. The better you are at reading people – and being able to know not what they're saying, but what they really want, because sometimes it's not the same, that makes life much more easy. But I'll use this situation that he already gave, because that gives the answer to actually what you could do in that situation. So you're dealing with someone type A. I do the same thing in my practice. And something that's very difficult for people that are very achievement-oriented, that want things and they want it yesterday, and they're hard on themselves, relaxing, breathing, taking a moment, letting their body heal, which is so vastly important if you are working out because you need that healing process is where you get all that growth and you're going to stop yourself from being prone to injuries. And it's also very good for your mental health at the same time. And I do it this way. So knowing the personality type, type A's are very achievement oriented. And if they understand why they should do something and that it will better them, they're on board. So one is that you need to give the reason for why this is important. Just saying, and I'm also type A, and so just telling me, you know what, I want you to do this, I might be like, you know what, I'm not doing any breathing techniques. I'm not going to be sitting down and relaxing, or I'm not going to stretch. These are things that for me are not an achievement on my little list of daily things that I want to get better at. Mm-hmm. And so I always give the reason why relaxation or breathing techniques or meditation or stretching are so important to your health and why they'll make you better. And so I go through and I make it as homework, and so that it gives them, like, by doing like the same personality type that would stop them from doing it because they're not achieving it, I've made it as something that it becomes an achievement to not do anything, mm-hmm. which changes the way that they look at it. And then they also learn that this is downtime. And so type A personalities, we rev high. We are very prone to anxiety and stress. It's hard for us to notice something that we might not be able to do. And so I'm teaching them that one is that when you're really stressed, your body is not healing. It just isn't. Your body is in active mode, and you're in either attack or runaway. And so we have all of this adrenaline and cortisol rushing through our bodies. But during that period of time, if you're at war, it's not the time when you're going to be rebuilding all of the walls to your buildings. It just doesn't make sense. So it is only in times of calm and relaxation that you're going to do repair work. And if you don't want to get sick, if you don't want to be prone for injury, and if you want to be very healthy and to be able to feel calm and centered all through the day, which is probably one of the reasons why you're working out, not just to look better, but also to feel better, being able to practice relaxation, because that's a skill, is also important. And I would say just as important as you're working out, because you need to let your body learn to heal and to be able to focus. And it also increases mental acuity. And so it'll also make you sharper. Less chance that you'll make any mistake. If you've ever, you know, not attached a plate properly on like a bar, not put something in right, it really increases injuries and you could hurt someone else. Mm-hmm. And so you want that mental acuity at the same time. And so I give them those reasonings. And then after, I'll say, and this is what I would like for you to do, and I would like for you to track it. And that would be 15 minutes I want you to do. And for me, it would be maybe meditation, or it would be a breathing technique or a flow activity, something that is not for purpose, but it's relaxing and soothing to you, so that you also train yourself that, you know, you can be revved up and you can work out, but then also you can practice, how do I let my body relax? Because for some people, they can't do it. They'll actually feel horrible being relaxed. And so you want to do this every day. It's a skill. Just like why I have to punch, you know, 10,000 times, I practice punching. It's not because I punched once really well that I need it. I practice 10,000 times so that it becomes muscle memory. And when I need to defend myself, I'm able to do it without thought. Relaxation, if you do not practice it and you are someone that is revved high, that's a go-getter, that never really feels calm, or is their mind is even spinning when there is nothing to do, then you need to be able to practice this so that you get better at this skill as well. And it is vastly important for your health. We launched a video series on at home, doing treating anxiety and, from your own personal place, because I think that a lot of people, you know, are too shy or too worried about dealing with it. And I think that people don't take their mental health as seriously as they should. And I think that it's hard to go meet a therapist, find someone that you feel comfortable with, and all of the other reasons. And then at least on your own, you can kind of go through that and think, what are the pieces in my life that I'm not dealing with? And so that's what you want to do as a coach. You want to be able to look at someone and understand why they would not be doing something, and then let them know why this would be an, why you feel that this is an important piece to their training. And then for most people, especially if they're type A, type A's want to achieve something, giving them the pros of why you should, giving them reasons of what the benefits will be, and then holding them, and this is the important part, holding them accountable to that. so that they have to track it. And then actually you have to go back and say, you know what? And now we're going to check on this afterwards. That is the end to the cycle. And that greatly increases the amount of people being able to try out a new activity. Because it takes like 2 weeks before you get good at something. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to be doing breathing techniques, about relaxation, stress, like you really want to do it so that it becomes a habit. You need at least 2 weeks to do it. At least this makes them, but you have to go back and ask, can I see the sheet of paper? And I say that, and I tell the people exactly the reason why I want it written down is because it'll increase the chance that you'll do it, or I'll even have them stick it on a wall and then bring it in.
So you can clarify me or clarify if I'm mistaken, but is that at anxiety-videos.com?
Yes. The videos that we do for learning about yourself at home is at anxiety-videos.com. They're each a separate piece. So like there's like one on sleep, and that one's just on sleep issues. It's a standalone session.
Okay. We all need to download that, folks. I was talking to George, like I was up at like 3:30 in the morning on Twitter, just because like, man, I got to go pee. So I'm going to, of course, I'm going to check my phone and make sure that the world is still moving.
Right. Right. the sleep one is really important. I think that it's, and it goes through like, I think that's like, I don't know, 25 to 50 different techniques of how to sleep better. Sleep was my issue as well. And we've spoken about it before. It was a really hard thing for me. And I use these techniques, and this is how I got myself to sleep better as well. And I go through why these techniques are important. And what you can do to stop yourself from going through those cycling thoughts of, ooh, what about this? Or this is really important. Oh, I forgot that. Which will wake you fully up. We wake up like 5 or 6 times a night. And so we go through how to stop yourself from going in. We usually don't remember it because our long-term memory is off during that period of time when we turn over, check, do I have to go to the washroom? Am I hungry? Am I too hot? Am I too cold? Am I uncomfortable? And so during that period of time, why we if we are in deep sleep, we won't remember it is because our long-term memory is off. And only if we think of a worry or a stressful thought will we actually wake up, and our long-term memory becomes on and we remember that we woke up.
So okay, sorry, I'm reading stuff. I'm reading the website. I want to, before we wrap up, I want to throw this question at you because I love these open-ended questions where you can go anywhere with it. But, I mean, you are always, like, digging into this stuff. You're getting to meet a ton of people. What's, like maybe in, like, the last couple of months, like, what is, like, just, like, the coolest thing that you've, you know, learned about what you do, or just, like, the thing that is kind of fascinating you the most in therapy these days?
The thing that I love, the thing that I think is really important that people can kind of take away that I don't think we do enough of, is I think that a lot of people spend most of their emotional time either living in the past of what was and hurts and issues and things that they were dealing with, or living in the future.
Right.
And I think that missing out on being right now is a huge issue with the way that we live our lives. And so we're missing out on all of the moments that we have at now. And if we're living in the future, that's where anxiety is. Regret is in the past. And time is very, very fast for you when you're not actually in the here and now and doing what you're doing and doing it fully. You're not getting the most out of your moments because right now is the only thing that actually exists. Right? You can't go back. And
I'm letting that sink in for everyone for a second.
Pardon me?
I'm trying to let that sink in for people because that was one of my problems with all this. Like I wouldn't necessarily call myself a hoarder, but
yeah,
you know, overthinking about all this stuff and thinking about, you know, potentially, you know, playing it or whatever, like that was preoccupying a lot of my time instead of thinking like, all right, well, like it's 4:30. I have like 2 hours of free time. You know, what would I do with that 2 hours of free time? Like if I,
yes,
you know, instead of just like, man, I'm just going to look at this wall and just like shuffle through this stuff or organize it or something.
Yes. Yeah. And by doing that, by living just right now, you can make much better decisions. You can think, like, each moment that you have is precious, and what would be the regrets that I would live through? And so for myself, the one thing that I try to do is to take the risks of, you know, ego and risk of failure and not doing something as perfectly as I might hope to, but try. Because the thing that would bother me the most is living with regrets of what could have been if I had taken that risk later. And so I really try to say, I'm going to just be in here and now, and I'm here. So if I'm in a session with someone, or if I'm doing a podcast or anything else, I just want to be in the podcast. And there might be a whole bunch of things that are running through in my mind and things that I have to deal with, talks that I'm giving, something else that might be happening. But right now, I'm just here. And I'm going to try to learn from it, enjoy it, and not feel that rushing feeling that we feel inside of us when we're being impatient, when we're hoping that things happen faster than what they could. I really try to just feel that feeling of how lucky I am and all of the fortunate things that are happening in my life right now that I can be thankful for. And that causes a wonderful feeling of peace and serenity, even if there's 1,000 things later. And I think to myself that the only thing I need to deal with is what is right in front of me now. And all of the other things I will deal with when they're in front of me now. And until that, I'm just going to live here instead of always spending that time of worrying about what ifs or what could be.
Damn, that's a good way to end this show. All right. So I want to just remind people that Georgia is like 30% of the internet. So if you just kind of like open up your favorite,
that's like a tagline. I love it. 30%. I'm going to put that on my Twitter.
There you go.
30% of the internet.
30% of the internet is Georgia Dow, or she's like one of the, you know, panelists on that, or part of the video, or just like in the background shot.
Right. I'm just like jumping into areas where I should be.
She's going to be the first person that gets the spike in the back of the head and gets into the Matrix. But so I'm gonna drop some stuff. I want you to fill the holes, though, if I miss anything. So we mentioned anxiety-videos.com, which is the awesome new video series. And I'm totally checking out the one on sleep because I'll raise my hand. I'm that guy who sucks at sleeping, I don't value sleep. I know it's like, yeah, you know, sleeping less will increase to like weight gain and hormonal issues. I'm like, I don't care. I just, you know, I want to do this stuff. I'm going to be on my phone for an hour between 3 and 4 in the morning. I do that like maybe once a week.
Right.
I'm terrible about sleep prep and all that stuff. So, again, that's anxiety-videos.com. Go check that out. It's a cool new thing Georgia's doing. And also, of course, you're on iMore.com, which has had a ton of great new coverage from the latest Apple stuff, some updates with the Apple Watch. And also, you know, we actually talked a little bit about advertising on the internet. Renee, I believe, had a great post on advertising and like what that means with ad blockers and stuff like that on the iPhone, which is really, really cool. So if you're into Apple stuff, get your butt over to iMore.com. Like, you guys do it the best. It is the place where I go to get Apple news and like feedback on stuff. So give that a look. On Twit a lot these days.
I'm sometimes on Twit. I do also Tech News Tonight sometimes, which is a lot of fun. And I'm usually working during Mac Break, but I've been on there as well.
Okay, so I'm trying to think. So we also got Isometric.
Yeah.
Which is kicking ass on weekly episodes again, if I wouldn't even say like if you're into video games, you should check it out. But also if you just want to like see you know, what the video game industry landscape is like these days. And I don't even want to go down the path of talking about some of like the horrible things about the video game industry, but you guys have a great take on, you know, stuff that is going on, discussing the latest games, news. And also the things that do come up, even though, you know, we don't always want to talk about it, but the, you know, video game landscape is very interesting these days.
Yes.
The way, you know, the communities are, the games that are coming out, the way games are changing and things like that. So you guys do an awesome job of that. And also Vector is back.
Vector is back. And we're going to have someone like We have some really cool guests coming up too, which is really neat. And it's just a lot of fun. I just enjoy doing Vector because we can talk about like tech and culture stuff, and just kind of go there and discuss what people would be discussing with the people that are like, you know, making news in the tech biz.
It's like, this is one of the best things about doing all this podcast stuff is it is literally, I mean, you're sharing information and stuff, but it's just like, yeah, let's go get coffee and talk about stuff for an hour, but we're going to record it and we're going to share it with, you know, thousands of people, which is cool.
Yeah. It's always shocking to me when people are like, I listen to you do this. And I'm like, really? Really?
Go to those conferences, be like, hey, you know, I remember that thing you said like 2.5 years ago. And you're like, no, but did I say that on a thing I shared on the internet?
Yeah. That's always the scary thing is also I'm like, when someone says, you know, I remember when you said that, I'm like, what did I say? Like, I hope it was good. Was it good?
And of course, maybe the best place to go, if you're on Twitter and who isn't these days, is Georgia_Dow, where you can get, tweets on those updates when new podcasts are up, when new videos are out, or when you have new speaking engagements. Are any of those coming up?
Yes, I'm going to be doing release notes. It's a developers conference, and for people that enjoy applications and want to know a little bit more about it, I love doing conferences. It's just such a fun thing because you're with like-minded people, and it's great networking, and it's a lot of fun, and we get to enjoy. And I really love people, so I love to meet new people and talk to them and find out what they enjoy and why they enjoy it and what makes them work. And so I'll be doing that conference. And Mike Hurley will be the keynote at that, and he's amazing. And I believe it's the 21st to 23rd in Indiana, and there's still tickets on sale right now, but they won't be on for long. And it should be just a lot of fun. Joe and Charles, who run it, are just really wonderful, wonderful people and very thoughtful and caring. And so it's going to be a great conference.
You're going to have time to go say hi to Leslie Knope?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Stop by Pawnee. Parks and Rec crowd. All right. Well, that is, I think, where we're going to wrap things up. But like I said, don't go just yet because we do have that agenda-free segment coming up. You may want to stick around. You may not. I don't know. Like, it depends if that stuff is cool. We talk about some cool Apple stuff. We talk about Jackie Chan movies. We talk about, thinking about checking in and finding a good therapist, I almost say like a physical therapist, but no, actual, you know, therapist, and just some really cool stuff on there. And for everyone else, I really appreciate if you enjoy the show, if you jump on iTunes, submit a review on there while you're there. Check out the iMore podcast, Isometric, Vector. Check out Tech News Tonight. The Twit Network is also fantastic for podcasting stuff. And also, if you can find me on Twitter at Kevin Larrabee. I post about stuff on there. New episodes, guests that are coming up at FitCast. And I'm even on like Instagram now, which is still kind of weird for me. Yeah. It was something I resisted for a long time, but it's kind of cool to like post like, you know, short stuff. And, you know, they were really smart to make the heart thing is like a like thing. It's like, oh man, people really like this stuff or whatever, whether it's a picture of a Persona 4 that I've been playing for 45 hours over three years.
Right.
Or whatever. So yeah, that's also just Kevin Larrabee. And I think it links with Twitter or Facebook. I don't know. It does all that stuff. Facebook Very bottom. Cool. So I don't know. Everyone's mine, everyone. But this show is not for sale. It is supported by those great people at patreon.com/thefitcast. So thank you to everyone on there. And I think we are going to get out of here. So Georgia, thank you so much for taking another hour and a half to talk about all this cool stuff. And I'm going to hit you up again soon so we can talk a little bit more.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay, we got another agenda-free segment for all those outstanding Patreon folks out there. And you know who my guest is. It's Georgia Dow. Hey, Georgia.
You keep on trying to get rid of me, and I keep on coming back.
No, and it's like, it's one of those things where I actually did a segment with Brian Patrick Murphy, who's he's a trainer in New York, and you and I have talked about this, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try to, like, I've heard awesome things about, like, finding a therapist to talk to.
Yeah.
I still haven't done it.
Like, I'm really lucky in that, like, I work with therapists, so we're always dealing with our own stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's such an amazing, I think that because of the old way that people would, like, look down upon it.
Right.
Because, like, that means that there's something wrong with you, which is, it's the wrong way to play the game of life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to play a game, you want to know all the rules. And you want to know all the pieces and how each piece moves. If you know that, then it makes it so much easier to win. And so we're exactly the same way. And these skills should be taught to us in school, in elementary school, so that we understand how to deal with conflict, what kind of attachment style we have, what personality type we are, what are our wounds, what are our fears, if you know all of those things and you can honestly assess your weaknesses, mm-hmm. the things that trigger you and why, what would stop you from reaching your goals?
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
And so it's like the most important thing you can do. And again, if you're like, I'm a therapist and I'm pretty good at self-assessment, and it's still great for someone else to say, you know what, Georgia, you often do this. And I'm like, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I think you do. And then I'm like, you know, you mull over it for a while and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. I do this. And then you can work on it and make your life better. It's just so straightforward.
Yeah. And I've been feeling like really good lately. So I felt like, you know, there's times when, man, you're going through like a rough patch or something like that. And you're like, yeah, I could really use it. Then unfortunately for me over the last couple of weeks, things smoothed out. And I went to that website that you recommended that has like reviews, and like, oh my God, there's all these people, and where do you even start?
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many people in my area, and
it's so hard because someone can look great on paper and you just don't connect, mm-hmm. or the techniques aren't right for you, or they only look good on paper. It's really difficult to find someone. And I think that you need to speak to someone on the phone, mm-hmm. because even if your friend likes them, like personality types in therapy, it's similar to dating. You want to feel comfortable with someone. You want to be able to open up. You want to know that they get you, and you want to be able to have this like a partnership. And then there's many different therapeutic types. And so some people are very opaque therapists, and they're just, you know, you're going to cry and talk about something horrible and they will be just straight faced and not do anything. I'm much more transparent, and I will say to you exactly how I feel. And if I'm upset, I'll be upset as well. And we can kind of work through it more on a even playing field. And everyone's a little bit different, and they're good for different types of treatments depending on what you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe this is, I think this is something vital enough. I might actually just cut and paste this into the main show.
Right.
We
could do it the reverse. We could do the end piece first and the first piece at the end.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, it's like, I'm looking, and this is a little bit behind the curtains, but like my Patreon support has like dropped off.
Really?
Like over the last couple of weeks. And I think part of it is like, you know, Patreon had like a breach or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Which, that's true.
And, you know, this stuff like scares the crap out of people, but literally like no personal information was taken from this like breach. It's just like you have to say like no credit card numbers, no, and like that's all they would really have is your credit card number. And like you could give out your credit card number like on this call right now, and but people can't really do much with it because you have
6754.
Yeah, right. It's like, and the bad thing is like I know like my 4640-1820. Like I know mine by heart, unfortunately, because of the internet. But you know, for people that are listening to this, I might actually put this in as like, yeah, you know, this is what you can kind of expect from, you know, a added bonus of helping support the show. And
yeah,
don't worry about the like Patreon stuff. Like Target got hit, and you know, everyone gets like Trump hotels just got hit yesterday.
Yes.
So, and it's one of those things where I think people, it's the Facebook thing. You read, and this is, you're a great person to talk about this because this is happening so much now with our presidential races that people are, they read a headline, they make a judgment without reading the article, because the way that we make headlines now is to draw people to click on that link, to get to the page, to get the ad revenue. Even I got called out on it for like two blog posts that I did when I like titled them saying goodbye to video games, which in a big way I did, but I guess not literally completely. But for the folks out there, like this is, you know, again, just a, I will put this, I've made the decision. This is going to be part of the whole episode for everyone. This is going to be a free agenda, free segment for everyone. And hopefully the Patreon supporters understand, like I'm trying to continue to, you know, increase the support for the show, so I can continue to do this stuff, because that's why I have to sometimes record a bunch at the same time, because I'm traveling all over the place now. And it's the great way of the internet is that if you appreciate something and you want it to support the production of something, it's a great outlet to do it now. Patreon is a great way to do it.
Yeah.
Have you messed with that at all?
Like I haven't. We thought about doing it for one of our podcasts just to try it out. But we haven't usually. But it's a great way that people can like opt in and there's no ads and you can, you know, pay for things you want. And for the price of less than one coffee,
I know.
You know, you're getting like a full set of podcasts. It's so little.
I'll just jump in for a second. I swear I get every week I get people submitting things to ask to advertise on the show, and I get them from like big supplement companies, and I turn them down because I don't want to like say, you know, brought to you by this company that makes supplements that aren't backed by any research, but you know, they decided they wanted to give me $1,000 per episode, but I said no because I don't believe in that stuff, and it's not worth throwing my name under the bus to get an extra, you know, $1,000 for an episode or something. Although that's a lot of money.
It is, and it makes it really difficult. So, you know, when we don't get support from something like people, you know, pay into, then it kind of plays your hand, and you're forced to advertise for something that you might not know about. You might not really, you know, feel is the best, but it does force your hand, and we need to eat, right? Like people need to make a living off of what they do. And it's really difficult. I think that one of the issues with the internet, of everything being able to be free if you want it to be, is that it's hard now, and especially with ad blocking, it makes it really difficult to how are we going to be able to support so we can still bring in, you know, shows that are high quality and very little fluff. And it becomes something very difficult. I don't think that people really understand what goes into it. And because of that, and because, you know, other stuff are free that are there, and people think, you know, free is usually better.
Right.
But you do usually get in what you get out.
Yeah. And there's definitely, I wouldn't even, there's other podcasts like in the fitness and nutrition, you know, category on iTunes. You know, I'm sure other people listening to, you know, other shows I'm talking about that are like 30% advertisements. I'm not even kidding in terms of like how much time is spent. And that's just something I'm not willing to do, because I wouldn't turn on that show to listen to it.
Right.
And that's with anything that I do, I always try it. And I think this is what hopefully most of us are doing with our lives. We're trying to create stuff, and we're trying to do work that we would ourselves appreciate, and not just to, you know, get to, you know, it's like rushing to finish your homework or something like that. You're not going to be proud of the homework that you submit. Or I don't know, that probably doesn't make sense. But anyways.
No, but I completely understand. Sometimes, you know, you want to put out something that you can put the time in, that you don't feel angry in doing. You don't feel like it isn't appreciated as well. And so, you know, by like, you know, people don't understand that like something really small as that one person that does it can be like, okay, now it's worthwhile. Thank you for that.
Right.
And much appreciated.
let's jump around a little bit. I know for us, we had people that like technology. Microsoft had a big event yesterday, and I was wondering if you got to check out any of that stuff. If you had thoughts on, I think it is their new Windows. It's like their MacBook Pro competitor. With this new tablet with my keyboard with a built-in GPU and the keyboard.
Yeah, I haven't yet been able to see the full keynote because on Tuesdays is like yesterday, mm-hmm. Which was Tuesday for us. It won't be when the show comes out, but it's my longest day. So I work sometimes like a 9 to 9, mm-hmm. Sometimes like a 10 to 9. So yes. I really have very little time on Tuesdays to be able to do it. So depending on when you know, a big unveiling comes out, I'm sometimes a little bit behind on the curve. But I don't know. I'm always really excited about, like, what I would love to know is, like, I'm most excited about the HoloLens and how great was it, because the last time I spoke with someone that actually used it, it was a really huge scaled down version compared to what they first showed on the first unveiling of HoloLens. So what happened with that?
Well, they announced like dev kits for it, which I guess are going to be $3,000, which, you know, I guess is a little bit more than the competitor, which is the, oh my God, why am I blanking on Oculus Rift?
Yeah.
But I think, with all this stuff, I think Microsoft has had a huge step forward in their competition with Apple. It's like they have a brand new flagship phone, which looks like it's kick ass and, you know, is a really good, you know, side by side comparison tech wise, if not better than even the iPhone 6S. But of course, you got to give up your warm, cozy house of iOS if you want to go all Windows and stuff. But I just like to see it. Selfishly, because especially with this laptop stuff, I think it's going to force Apple to have just because they're touting this as like this is like four times as powerful or twice as powerful as like the best MacBook Pro on the market, and I just
wow. hope
it's like making Apple just put so much crap into the next MacBook Pro, because obviously, I mean, we're both Mac people and.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does take a little bit of like a kick in the butt to make Apple do some cool stuff, especially with like their laptops have not always been the fastest.
Yeah.
But let's get some new Core i7s in there and some new GPUs that aren't a step backwards like the last revision, and like better battery life. Like this thing does 12 hours of battery life with a dedicated GPU, and supposedly again, you know. Faster than anything else that Apple has on the market, but their laptops are a year old, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I love it. The more competition, the better it is for us.
Yeah.
I love it. I like the way that there's a stylus that sticks on to the side. That's what I am sad about for the new iPad Pro is like I'm going to lose the stylus. It's going to be the first thing that I'm going to lose.
You're right.
Because I lose everything, and so I need to have. I'm gonna like duct tape it on or something. Like
are you
that.
Are you
so,
gonna, are you going for the iPad Pro?
I probably will. I probably Oof. Will. I've always wanted to have a larger iPad. You know, I have my phone, which I use the 6 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So and right now I have the 6S Plus, and so it's big. I don't need that. That fits, you know, in mobility for me, and then. This would be something that's like a nice, large, stationary device that, you know, I don't even have to hold it. I have a float tablet holder that's like you can like spin around and it kind of like holds it for you. And so I would love to just like game and stuff and use a stylus and, you know, write and draw like that. So I'm a pen and paper kind of person. So this fits with me.
Yeah, it should be cool to see what people are able to do with that, and if there is a spot for that in the competitive tablet market now, with everyone from Amazon has a $50 tablet up to, you know, talking about $1,000 for a loaded up iPad Pro. So
yeah,
Hopefully there's plenty of people with tons of cash out there to buy all this stuff, because I like to see it.
Well, the iPad market was dwindling. So, still doing really great. But, people don't upgrade every year like they do with their phone, or every 2 years like they usually do as the usual cycle. So this, they had to beef something up and make it useful and different so that people would think, you know what, this one makes it worthwhile to upgrade.
Well, speaking of upgrades, like I've definitely been I have an iPhone 6, and I know next time, almost exclusively just for battery life, I'm definitely going to go for the 6 or whatever the plus is of whatever the next version is. I guess it would be iPhone 7 Plus. But is there enough right now, do you think, to make that jump from the 6 to the 6S?
You know what? If you have a 6, I think that unless you review technology for a living, I don't think that you need to upgrade. Mm-hmm. I think that it's I really like Force Touch. I think that it saves time. It's really quick, so the phone flies. Mm-hmm. But they're very similar. I can't say that I notice a huge difference. It's all minor, incremental, and in every way, shape, or form. There's minor, even in the bend gate. They're even in the manufacturing of what it's made out of. This is a stronger phone, And so it's better. It's a little bit more waterproof. They have a seal along the edges. But does that mean that you should upgrade? No, probably not. And I wouldn't, if I don't do this for a living, I wouldn't upgrade. And I usually don't upgrade to the newer phones. But this one is pretty cool. I enjoy the Force Touch because it makes my life easier. I don't have a lot of time. So you can peek at things. You can look into things. There's quick shortcuts. I think that getting used to being able to do it, I use things the old-fashioned way of like looking around and searching for things because I'm not used to using Force Touch. But 3D Touch. It's just an easier way to take a look at messages without having to then mark them back as unread if you then are worried that you're going to forget to go back to it.
That's cool stuff. I hope one cool thing that the new Windows phone, I think it's the Lumia something, but the thing like actually has a dock where you can plug it into like through HDMI into a monitor and a keyboard, and you can actually run it as a PC. It's like now, that. The phones are that powerful now.
Now, so you're plugging it into a dock and you're using the interface of the phone?
You can actually use your phone as a second screen, but you can put apps onto a computer monitor or TV, and you can hook up Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and run Windows 10 apps on it.
Which is cool. I just don't know if I would ever do that.
I never would do it, but it's just like
to have the option too.
Well, yeah, it's like what if you go to you're like going to work, you're going to a friend's house, and you end up like having an extra couple hours to like kill, and you're like, I'm going to type something up. I don't have my laptop though. I have my phone. I can just hook up my and I have the dock, I guess, for my phone. But
I carry around in my back pocket.
It's a mess. It's a mess. But it is at least like one of those things where, hey, that's cool. And I would never do it. Like if I don't leave my house without my laptop for the most part, but still, it's just a showcase that
it's powerful.
These phones are so damn powerful right now. You can edit 4K video on your phone.
But again, that sounds like a horror. Like, I think it's wonderful that we can. I just never will.
Terrible experience.
Because if I'm going to have to edit video, like even I don't even like typing out long emails on my phone. And this phone is huge. Mm-hmm. But it's not a pleasant experience. If I have to type anything, I want a keyboard. Yeah, I want a full-size keyboard, and I have tiny hands, but I just want a keyboard. I want to be able to type it out really, really quick. Tapping on glass is fine, but it's not my favorite of situations.
And I'm with you. And then I talked to people who listen to the show. Jesse Nealand, who I guess would have been on the episode before this. She lives in New York, or she just moved out of New York. She would write her blog posts, like her articles, on the train on her phone.
Really?
And she would just type them up like on her phone. Like, I don't know if that is, she's not that much younger than us, but I don't know if that's just like a generational thing where people feel like comfortable enough to write whole articles on their phone while standing up.
Well, I understand that's a time saver. It's just, it's such an unpleasant experience in comparison to typing on my Air. That's the only thing is that I guess it's nice to have the option if you need to.
What else can we? Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, that was it.
So how is Flight of the Navigator? How's that going?
Oh, geez. You know, and I have it. I still have it on my reminders. It's like my reminder of shame. I have it there, and
it's like I want you to watch a great movie.
I know, and you know what really is bad, and I will admit this. I watched Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. I believe that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And it was like it's one of the top 50, and we're like, you know, I want to see a movie, and it was horrible. It was just.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that one.
Nah, it's like people think that a movie is just good because it's psychological, but it's actually should be a good movie as well. And the psychology of it was poor as well. But anyways.
It's not a satisfying movie either.
It was just a horrible film. I'd love to hear the reasons why some people might love that movie, but it was just wrong in so many ways. And I thought to myself when I looked back at my reminders and I see like Flight of the Navigator and I'm like, you know what?
Oh, geez.
That serves you right. It serves you right. You have the movie. Everyone said to watch it. I'm waiting to watch, and I didn't do it. So
okay. Let me tell you another one. If you've probably seen this already, but it came out on Blu-ray yesterday. I had it pre-ordered like months ago, and it finally got here. And that is the 19. I think it's 19. It came out in the States maybe in 1996. Rumble in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, is that movie awesome.
That's a great movie. But I've seen, I think, every single Jackie Chan movie that there is. Like, every single Jackie Chan movie, I think that I've watched them. I have not yet found – and that means all the way down to when he did the movie with – the movies with, like, Sammo Hung and they, like
– Oh, yeah.
Like, I think
Drunken
I've
Master.
Seen every – Oh, yeah. Let's I think go. I've seen every single film that he's ever made. I love Rumble in Bronx, and I love, like, watching his outtakes. And if you've ever seen Jackie Chan's My Story, also really amazing, and My Stunts, an amazing set if you're a Jackie Chan fan, because he goes through, like, the My Stunts is amazing because he goes through his biggest stunts, he goes through his scariest stunts, and he goes through how he trains his stunt team, because he can't get insurance, by the way. He just can't because of doing his own stunts. And so he has his specially trained stunt team and they do the most insane things and their precision is incredible. And like, you know, the way like that he can jump through a ladder.
Right.
Who can do that? Who could do that?
That's Jackie Chan's First Strike, right?
You know what? I'm not even sure which one that he's done a few that he does a lot of things with regular things. There's a few that he has ladder tricks in them. And I'm not even going to say tricks or stunts. It's just skill. and it's just amazing. He's amazing.
But when was the last time you watched Rumble in the Bronx?
I have not seen that. I saw it when it came out, and then I saw it again maybe 2 years later.
Okay. You got to put this on your
– Yes?
I haven't seen it in maybe 15 years, and I was – And I was surprised, like, we had it on VHS, so I watched the crap out of it as a kid. I was so surprised how great the action still was and how fantastic the Blu-ray transfer was. So it's definitely a recommend if you guys haven't seen it or if you haven't seen it in a long time. Man, that movie still, it's still kind of dumb, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a Jackie Chan movie, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, you just have to – like that's – he has his own little quirky comedic style with things and pretty cool.
So now I actually have to open up New Police Story, which I've had for like a year and I haven't opened it up. And that's like one of his newer movies, but it's supposed to be out – well, it's from 2004, but that's next on my Jackie Chan movie festival.
Have you seen his My Stunts?
I want to say I have. And I don't know. I'm looking it up on. Oh wow, this is from 99. This might be tough to get. Looks like it's kind of rare now. It's on a DVD that's like $15, but maybe I can pick it up.
It's great.
Okay.
It's just great.
I'll take a look. So just if you've seen is Rush Hour 1 through 3, maybe branch out and see some Mr. Nice Guy, Jackie Chan, First Strike, Super Cop,
Drunken Police Masters. Stories. You got all
of
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's that box set? You have like the James Bond box set. Where's the Jackie Chan like
how
box
many,
set?
How many would that be?
It's a bazillion. It's like 400 discs. It's just going to come in a crate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just a dump truck.
Yeah, I'll take a dump truck at Jackie Chan any day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, and I can't remember, but it was that time of Rumble in the Bronx when, like, First Strike came out, Super Cop came out, when there was also some, like, connective tissue between those movies, because I think he had, like, the same name in all the movies. It wasn't like Jackie. I think, like, it wasn't in Rumble in the Bronx, but at least Super Cop and First Strike, maybe they're connected in some way, but damn, those movies are good.
They're so good.
All right. That's 25 minutes, and that's what you can kind of expect. It's sometimes all over the place, but that is an agenda-free segment. So thank you to everyone that gets these when we do them every single time, and hopefully for those that are just hanging out and still on their ride into work, you consider going to patreon.com/theficass and helping support future production of these episodes. Thank you so much.